Joe Moyers has always struck me as a pretty perceptive, insightful, and thoughtful kind of guy, one not easily given to making alarmist or over-the-top observations. Even when I haven't completely agreed with him, I figure he's got both his feet on the ground and his head properly screwed on. So when he makes a statement such as the one he recently did upon receiving an award from the Center for Health and the Global Environment at the Harvard Medical School, I take notice and take him seriously. Here's part of what he said in the course of that address. One of the biggest changes in politics in my lifetime is that the delusional is no longer marginal. It has come in from the fringe to sit in the seats of power. For the first time in our history, ideology and theology hold a monopoly of power in Washington. The gist of his address, which I'm not going to get into in any great detail this morning, is that what had largely been up until recently regarded as fringe religious ideas and beliefs have become sufficiently mainstreamed enough now to be given serious regard in the halls of power in our nation. Moyer cites a 2002 Times CNN poll, which indicates that 59% of Americans believe that the prophecies found in the book of Revelation are going to come true and view the events of the Middle East in that light. In the same poll, nearly one-fourth think the Bible predicted the 9/11 attacks. Moyer goes on to point out that Christian fundamentalist and right-wing lawyer Timothy LaHaye regularly sees his books on the bestseller list, all of which are variations upon the theme that we are living in the end times. We're not close enough to the end times yet that he can publish 12 books, but I guess we're getting there. The end times are leading up to the crowning event when the righteous believers will be taken up into heaven. Raptured is the term, leaving the rest of us even types to suffer and be tortured here below. These end times are all somehow tied in with Israel reclaiming its rightful, quote-unquote, biblical lands, and then the Jews being converted to Christianity, plus a bunch of other stuff in Revelation that I don't quite get, but that's okay. When Moyer says the delusional is no longer marginal, he means that persons, groups, and organizations holding and promoting such ideas are enjoying and using access to political power in a way that has never been the case before. Quoting him once again, we're not talking about a handful of fringe lawmakers who hold or are beholden to these beliefs. Nearly half the United States Congress before the recent election, 231 legislators in total and more since the election, are backed by the religious right. 55 senators, 186 House members, the 108th Congress earned 80 to 100% ratings from the three most influential Christian right advocacy groups. They include the Senate Majority Leader, the Assistant Majority Leader, the House Speaker, the House Majority Whip, various others in positions of power. Now, Moyer does not say that all of these folk that I just named or alluded to have the same views just referred to, but that they are generally in accord with the political agendas of those who do. Well, I don't think Moyer is being alarmist or hysterical in his portrayal of our current religious, cultural, and political landscape. As I hope to point out today and on the next two successive Sundays as well, however, he is not, thankfully, describing the totality of our religious, political, and cultural landscape, and I think he would agree with me on that. But I want to use one phrase, which I've already referred twice from his speech, as a way of moving us into our topic for the morning. The delusional, you will recall, he says, is no longer marginal. Now, personally, I happen to concur with Moyers in his use of the term delusional here. But I am also quite aware, as Mr. Moyers himself is, I'm sure, he was raised Southern Baptist in Texas after all, that when it comes to those to whom he is referring in using that term delusional, these folk would reply, I'm not deluded at all, Mr. Moyers, or Mr. Eddington. I'm just being a person of faith. Person of faith. What does that mean? It's easy enough to kind of blow that off and say, well, one person's delusion is another person's faith, but I'd like to go a little deeper than that. Only in an abbreviated way this morning, abbreviated because we've already had a very full service. We've got an important congregational meeting to follow. So I'm just going to set the table this morning for some things I want to share over the next couple of Sundays. So if you want the whole meal, you're going to have to show up for that. What does it mean? What can it mean for a religious liberal to be a person of faith? What does it mean for this gathered community here to be a community of faith as I take it to be? Like I say, I want to look at that both today and over the next couple of weeks. So just to set the table then, I'm going to offer a roadmap kind of distinction for two types of faith that I want to put before you. Now I say a roadmap because the actual territory, as any of you who've ever followed a roadmap to get somewhere knows, the actual territory that a map course illustrates is never quite as neatly and cleanly drawn as the map itself. But a map was a useful guide nonetheless. So I'm asking you to take this as a map, realizing that your own religious and spiritual territory, as it were, probably doesn't break quite as cleanly or is drawn quite as neatly as I'm going to put it out here. I'm deliberately being arbitrary for the sake of getting a point. That said, I would set forth two types of faith. They differ with respect to the realms in which they're ultimately vested or anchored. One of them, we'll call it mode one, is the realm of the supernatural, or the otherworldly. The other, just to be consistent here, we'll make it mode two, is the realm of the natural, or the this-worldly. Now, persons who, practitioners of both of these modes of faith, they're lived out in this world, in one's day-to-day comings and goings. Persons of faith in both of these realms get up in the morning, go to work, go shopping, watch the Super Bowl, make predictions about the Super Bowl, like Patriots 27-20. That's my statement of faith for the morning. Persons from these two different realms, though, most likely will worship in different places. They will worship according to different precepts. Mode one faith, to stay with our roadmap terminology, holds that our lives and the life of the earth and the universe are ultimately in the hands of a willful and intentional supernatural supreme being, usually referred to as God, Jehovah, or Allah, depending upon whatever particular religion in which it is set. Quite often, the will, the intent, the commands of this supreme being are revealed through a sacred text, which, if not taken completely literally, is still to be accorded the utmost seriousness and authority nonetheless. It is this kind of God who gives meaning, purpose, and direction to our lives, and without such a God, there is no meaning, purpose, or direction in any ultimate sense. The powerful and ongoing presence of this kind of faith in our society and other parts of the world, I think, goes a long way in explaining why an issue like the teaching of human evolution will not go away. For really serious, fully committed, mode one persons of faith, the idea that we human beings got here by way of a process of millions of years during which time we evolved from lesser developed life forms, in the minds of these folk, that undercuts the idea of a willful and intentional supreme being who purposefully created human beings in a godly image. And absent such a God, life is ultimately meaningless and devoid of any chance of spiritual growth and nurture. Now, there are, I know, all kinds of ways of responding to that. I'm going to save that for another day. Moving from the personal to the societal, God, we're still in mode one faith here, also has a plan and will for societies. And one role, if not obligation, for persons of faith in this mode is to see that that plan is carried forward. And if Moyers is anywhere near correct, persons of faith in this mode are enjoying a fair measure of success at this moment. Well, I'm not exactly giving away any secrets when I say that this is not the mode of faith in which I operate. At the same time, I have no desire, on a personal level anyway, to be pejorative about it. Such faith has been and is a powerful and sustaining force in many persons' lives. It has gotten them through some very difficult times, through some terrible trials, tribulations, they might not otherwise have borne. And I certainly have no need, no desire, to take such a faith away from anyone, even if I could. Now, when it gets into the public or the civic arena, that's another story. you get. It's for another time. Okay, vote two. This one holds that meaningful living and spiritual nurture can be found solely within the realm of the natural. And that's a faith stance, I would say. Persons who operate in this mode might quibble a little bit about what constitutes the realm of the natural, but let's set that one aside too. Like I said, we're setting the table here. I went to our website this past week. I read the sermon that John Sanders gave here back on the 2nd of January, first Sunday of my mini sabbatical. And I found that, if you weren't here, you know, go read it. Well, go read it anyway, even if you were. I found that to be a wonderful example of a mode two person of faith. Now, at the time John was sharing those words with you, I was waking up to a beautiful day in the Bay Area, but you don't even know about that. Anyway, to be a person of faith in this mode means that you trust human capacity for reason and rationality and the strength found in the exercise of the human will, while also recognizing that such trust and exercise only takes one so far. As John put it, one is still left sensing the need for something more, something beyond the rational. Not contrary to the rational, just beyond it. The faith stance here is that this something more can indeed be found and can be found without recourse to the supernatural. To personalize this for a moment, I believe, as a matter of faith, that there is within this natural world and universe, and within myself, as a part of this natural world and universe, a depth dimension to life that I call sacred or holy. We can touch this dimension when we, as I say, push beyond our rational faculties without denying or disavowing them. And we can find that divine spark that connects us to the rest of being, to the rest of existence. Some call this sacred dimension the God within. On occasion, I do myself. Others may have other terms for it. Important as language is, the experience to which language points is of greater importance. And while I am not a practicing Buddhist, I find the Buddhist idea of being awake or awakened to be a good way of characterizing this mode of faith. The word Buddha itself means awakened one. Awakened in the sense of being truly aware of your surroundings. Deeply aware of the world in which you live and aware of your relationship to all that is. To live by faith in this awakened manner is to believe that this kind of relationship is worth living out. Now, my playful title for next Sunday's sermon is Fake It Till You Make It. But what it's actually about is trust. Trusting yourself, trusting your internal resources, your God within if you prefer, or not if you don't, and trusting in your capacity to live in an awakened way, even when you feel there's no way you can do that. In other words, it will be about living by faith, your faith. Well, just one more point today on what I'm calling mode two faith before finishing up. Beyond the personal, I would say the right and proper role of faith and persons of faith and of religions of whatever stripe in one's larger society or culture is to be the conscience of that society or culture. Part of being truly awake means being awakened to compassion, to human need, to the demands of justice, and awakened to the need for the care of the earth itself and all its creatures. This was the principle by which Martin Luther King and those who have followed his example and model have operated with. Dr. King's method was not to push a partisan, divisive political agenda by which God's will would be allegedly fulfilled, but rather to set before those in power the means by which the common good could be further advanced and that the demands of justice, equity, and compassion could be better met. Dr. King and others like him did this as a person of faith, as persons who were awakened to the human needs of their time and who believed in the power of the human spirit and in the power that is both contained within and that transcends that human spirit, to see that such ends were and are accomplished. Our faith journeys, then, are ones that go forth within the precious, the fragile, the sacred, and the time-bound lives we are given to live. Our faith stance is that the journey is worth the making, that life is worth waking up to, and that the cries and the needs of the world in which our lives are lived are worthy of our response. With this in mind, let's sing our closing hymn, "Wake Now, My Senses." It's number 298.